I've had the time of my life, and I owe it all to you.
What is going on, guys? Welcome back to episode number 43 of the Shenantics Podcast. I'm your host, Skanky, and I'm here with my good old pal, M-Call, as he usually is here. How are you doing, M-Call? What's going on?
I'm doing great. I'm doing fantastic.
That's super.
Usually I'm here. So not excited. Always. Every once in a while, I take a few weeks off, go on vacation.
You actually have a twin that comes on the show every once in a while.
Yes. Little known fact, I have a twin. I don't like to publicize it too much because he steps in for me when I need someone else to stream, someone else to go to work, and that's all his lifelong job is to step in when I need a substitute.
So. Exactly, and he actually was not conceived at birth. He was actually created in a...
Yes.
In a factory afterwards. Right?
Yes. Yeah.
Is that how that worked?
Yeah. He's an android.
Android twin.
Android twin. Yeah. Or cyborg. I don't know exactly. What? No. He's being bashful right now.
He's with you right now.
Yes.
Wow. Fascinating.
We're having a big weekend.
Do you have to charge him up or anything or?
No, he's got this cool, like, he charges by movement, like, kind of like one of those watches, you know, that we wear on your wrist, and just when you walk around, like, via the movement, charges up. Yeah, very sophisticated android, so we don't really have to worry about the charging thing, but he has the gears and stuff in, like, his elbows sometimes need to be oiled, so if you hear, like, squeaking and stuff, it's usually that. So, but
interesting.
Yeah, I strongly recommend it. I am a little worried. Close your ears.
I'm closing
a little,
him.
No, not you. Him. Not you.
Oh.
You.
Oh, okay. I'll open mine.
I need to tell you about this. How did you?
Oh, sorry. I thought you were talking to him for a second.
No, he can't hear this.
I zoned out.
No, but I'm a little worried every once in a while that he is going to decide that he doesn't need me, that he can just be the one that lives this life. And if I ever disappear, you know why. Well, you
How
might not
know
that
if
I've
you
disappeared.
Disappear, though.
Yeah, exactly. So,
what if you're the android right now?
What was that, Skanky? can't quite hear you.
Yo, bro, just think about it. What if we're all androids, dude, right? And, like, what if, just hold on, what if, like, we're just imagining in our minds, like, all the things in our body? Like, if we cut ourselves and, like, blood comes out, like, we're just visualizing that, but it's not actually there.
Wow, that actually could be.
Dude.
We might actually live in a simulation.
Let's not get into that discussion again.
true.
This is actually bringing up a good point. Yeah. Did you hear the news story about Saudi Arabia being the first country to give a robot citizenship?
What? No, really?
Yeah. It caused a giant controversy, as you thought it would.
If you were to give me a list of like 10 countries and be like, which one of these is going to be the first one that gives a robot like citizenship, would not have been Saudi Arabia. I think Saudi Arabia might have been the very bottom of the list.
Yeah, it's a little weird. Yeah. So there's this Hong Kong-based Hansen Robotics company that created this robot called Sophia.
Okay.
That looks terribly, terribly like. It just looks terrifying, to be honest with you. And the Saudi Arabia became the first country to grant it the robot citizenship. And it made the robot made a speech.
What? Oh my God, I'm actually kind of terrified.
Sophia said, "I am very honored and proud of this unique distinction. This is historical to be the first robot in the world to be recognized with citizenship."
Did Sophia write its own speech or did someone else like plug it in?
I mean, I would assume. She didn't.
I thought you were gonna go the other way. That you assume she did. I was like, what kind of point have we hit in like history?
Oh no.
Where it's like,
no.
I now assume the robot did it.
It's actually really freaky. Sophia has cameras and AI software that allow her to make eye contact and recognize people. She also has voice recognition capabilities and can become smarter by talking with people.
Oh, this is so cool.
Is it cool? I think that's terrifying.
I don't know. I'm so torn on the idea of robots, like, in our everyday lives. it would possibly be the greatest thing in the world, but I also worry that like I would get so comfortable with it that like they could easily just take over my life. Like the
Android they already discussion. Have taken over your life.
I mean, that is actually true. Robots do take over a lot of my life
already. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, it's just, I think that's kind of freaky. I mean, I just imagine the level of automation mm-hmm. that would occur.
Yeah.
That's already occurring.
Yeah.
And now you have robots that can do literally everything. I mean, what would humans do?
But couldn't they just live? Wouldn't it be like an awesome, ideal future where like humans got to live a life of leisure and the robots just did everything else for us?
Not exactly, because there's where would all the income
yeah that is that
come
is,
from
that is a very
to do anything
that is a very big problem that is
it
a
would
very
up
big
it would uplift the entirety of like any every economy like you would need to
so,
do something so that people didn't need to pay for things ever again.
Yeah, no, that is true. You'd have to. Yeah, no, that'd be interesting. Our current world is not built for all humans to live a life of leisure at all.
It gets worse and worse, it seems, even with technological advances
yeah.
increasing.
Yeah, no, it really does. It really does. I don't know, but I feel like if we could somehow take the small feat of restructuring all of the world governments and economies, living a life of leisure with robots doing everything would be pretty awesome. So, I mean, realistically, how great would it be to play, like, 50 hours of video games a week? Just like, hey, this is what I do. My robot butler cleans my entire apartment and, like, brings me things. That'd be pretty awesome.
This is what I think. We're in a black and white kind of thing here.
Yeah.
We're either going to be like the Jetsons, okay? Or we're going to be like the fat humans in Wall-E.
Those are our two options.
All right?
Yeah.
Those are our two options. And to be honest, I think we're moving more towards the Wall-E.
I do too. I really do feel like we're going more towards the Wall-E. So, but I don't know. I feel like could also be an illogical idea in my head, what I'm about to say. But like every time I get worried or scared about robots, like taking over more and more and more, I feel like I'm just like a Luddite in the past that was scared of other technological advances because it was unknown, right? Like, oh my God, that's going to be bad because I don't know about it. And then in hindsight, we look at it like, wow, you were crazy for hating that technological innovation just because you foresaw this big doomsday scenario. And then almost am I getting into that Luddite situation now because I don't know what the future of robotics holds, and thus that is making me nervous and scared about it. So I almost mm-hmm. want to just blindly embrace and trust it, which also is foolish.
That's part of the problem, though.
Yes, no, it is.
That is literally the problem.
But it feels like there's so much benefit to it.
Yeah, but okay, there's a benefit in that you're able to do anything you want, but it also comes to the point where it's like the double-edged sword is that you can do anything you want, and you don't get anything out of it.
It's true. Okay.
If that makes sense.
What in your life right now, what uh-huh. would you let a robot do for you? If anything.
I mean, you can go so far to tell the robot to do anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I could get a robot. I mean, in the future, what's going to happen is no one's going to drive cars anymore. All the cars are going to
be
driving
amazing.
Themselves.
That'd be so good.
So you could nap in the car. You
yes.
could sleep in the car, like on your way to work. So if you think about this for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say there are still jobs in the future, which there probably will, but
yeah.
like not that many,
yeah.
I would assume. You could work at a place that is 8 hours away
yes.
and sleep in the car
mm-hmm.
the entire time, wake up, go to work for, I would assume we're only going to work for 4 hours in the future, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
You get out of work in 4 hours, you go back in your car, and you drive 8 hours back home, and you could sleep on the way back, and then you can, like, I don't know, there's just so many different possibilities that you could do here. Plus, I would also assume that flights would be faster going places, so
yeah.
you could, like, do shit on the reg. Like, you could go anywhere you want.
Yeah.
I guess it does sound kind of cool, but like at the same time, there's serious economic disadvantages to this.
Yeah, there really are. When you kind of deplete like the exchanging of goods and services for value, like then and thus this like kind of like destroy the economy, then you kind of have other problems with how to, like you said earlier, how do people get anything, right? Like if I as Emco cannot produce and create anything that is of value to other people because robots can do it better, faster, and cheaper, then I have no way of making my own money to then go buy the goods and stuff that I need. So when I become an obsolete thing, then how do I sustain any way of living? So, but yeah,
no, that's true.
It'll be interesting. There's the other argument that, like, I mean, CGP Grey, if you guys have never watched any of his YouTube videos, he's kind of like one of those like educational type, I would say, YouTubers.
He makes great videos, yeah.
But he had a great video, I think it was Humans Need Not Apply, kind of going over the basics of this. And one of the counter arguments is that we've had technological revolutions before, like, for example, with like the advent and bringing in of the cars, and people are like, oh, well, if you bring in the cars, like, then we don't need like all this other stuff that was relied on previously, and it's going to destroy all these jobs. But then it kind of came around that the cars came and actually created new jobs and, you know, made everything better. And then like things kept on moving on. So you could have foresaw that, being like, oh, but all the horse and carriage drivers are going to be out of business and so on and so forth. But it kind of like adjusted how the model was. And so people do make the argument that with the creation of robots and them taking over pretty much everything, that there will be an adjustment of the jobs that people can do, like there still will be jobs. I don't know if I believe that. I believe that it's a big enough change and they'll take over so many different jobs that I don't think that the creation of new jobs will necessarily keep up with it. And CGP Grey's video kind of touches on a lot of those points more eloquently than I can. So I would recommend checking that one out.
Yeah, great YouTube channel.
So, yeah, his is
can I switch this to a different angle?
Of course.
Okay. So I want to ask you a couple of questions.
Okay.
And I think you've probably been asked these questions before, but maybe not. They actually went over this in a Radiolab episode, like it was a couple of days ago or maybe a week or two ago.
Okay.
But they were talking about the ethical dilemmas of driverless cars.
All right.
And when you think of that, you usually think like, oh, driverless cars are going to take jobs away from truck drivers, mm-hmm, and from people who like literally drive for a living. So taxi cabs, all these people just drive.
Yeah.
That's like your standard one.
Yeah.
But then they brought up a very interesting ethical dilemma that they're still figuring out with a driverless car.
Mm-hmm.
So let's rewind for a second. Let's imagine for a second you are next to a train track.
Okay.
Okay. And next to you is a lever.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
Now, have you done this before?
Yes, I've heard this before.
Okay. So there are four workers on the track ahead of you,
mm-hmm,
and a train is barreling down the tracks towards these four workers on the train on the tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, "Oh shit! If I don't do anything, these guys are gonna die."
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a side track where the train could go, where there's one worker on that track.
Mm-hmm.
If you switch the lever, the train will go onto the one track and kill the one worker.
Yeah.
If you do nothing, then the train will go and hit the four workers,
mm-hmm,
and they'll all die.
Yes.
So what do you decide to do?
So at the base of this ethical dilemma, and the reason why it is an ethical dilemma, is that if you decide to pull the switch, then you are actively taking somebody's life, right? You're killing one person, but you are actively making a choice, like, and doing an action that is thus killing that person. So it's more akin to like murder. Mm-hmm. But if you do nothing, like, are you necessarily morally culpable? Because like those people would have died anyways, maybe, and you aren't physically doing an action that causes their death, but more people do die. And I think the second thing is also like, do you value the life of like one person more than like the value like of four people?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I feel like my at times overly logical brain would pull the lever that would then kill the one person. Because at the end of the day, if you look at it, like the action of pulling, you can maybe frame it as the action of pulling the lever wasn't killing a person. It was saving three people's lives. Right. Like, so by like, yes, that one person died by the action of what I did, but also three people were also saved. So if you kind of reframe it as by pulling the lever, I saved three people's lives, then that maybe makes it feel a little better. But you were also putting in motion something that did kill someone else. I think I would still do, I would still do that, like as much as, and as terrible as it is to be the one that is actively killing another person. But like, at the end of the day, less harm is caused when only one person dies than when three people, even though it's not necessarily equatable. Like, lives are not equal. You can't say, like, three saved is better than one dead. But I think I would pull the lever.
Okay. So now let's switch it up again.
Yes.
You're sitting on, you're standing on top of an overpass.
Okay.
And a guy is standing next to you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the same situation is happening, but no sidetrack. So the train is going, like, towards you, and there's four workers below you.
Okay.
Okay? And if you do nothing, the train will crash into the four people and kill them. Or you can push the man next to you on the overpass onto the train tracks and kill him, stopping the train and saving the four other workers. Now what do you do?
I'd have to let the four people die. I don't think I could take the action of physically pushing somebody into harm.
So this is an interesting thing.
Yeah.
Because what they said on the podcast is that the people who decide to push the person onto the train tracks, I'm sorry if you chose that, but you're either a psychopath or a Buddhist monk.
What would you have said? What would you have said if I said I pushed the guy? Or were you just like seriously?
Well, you know, I don't know.
Were you just seriously banking on the fact that I'm not a psychopath?
Well, I think it's a good majority of people decide not to push the person off the bridge because you consider that in your head to be murder.
Yeah, like my stomach drops when you say that.
Instead of pulling the lever,
yeah,
which is an action that you're doing to put it out of your head that you're not committing a murder, but you're saving these people and committing an action, not a murder. It's different.
Yeah.
And it even happens with people who, like, let's say you're on top of the bridge and you have a long broom and you broomstick the person off the bridge. People will still say no because they still feel like they're killing somebody.
Yeah.
And they said that it was a Buddhist monk because the Buddhist monk can silence their conscience to make the most logical, do the most logical thing possible, which in this case is to save the most people versus the one.
Yeah.
So they can put it out of their mind. Oh, I'm not committing a murder. I'm saving those four people, no matter what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And the psychopath, I mean, obviously they don't give a fuck. So, so now it turns into a dilemma with driverless cars.
Real quick, before we get to the driverless cars.
Okay.
One thing that's also kind of interesting is that that idea between those two things is kind of summed up a little bit, or kind of not summed up, is actually takes place in criminal law in that there's two different and I'm totally going to butcher this because I'm not a criminal attorney. And all I remember is from my bar review. But there's two types of causation. There's actual cause and there's proximate cause. And the actual cause is, did you do an act that then led to something happening, right? Were you in the chain of causation that then caused somebody to die? And then proximate cause is, were you close enough in that chain that we want to hold you morally culpable for the crime that you did? Or was what you did far enough out that we're going to kind of let you off the hook, right? Like, yeah, you were in the chain that kind of led to that person getting injured, killed, harmed in some way. But you were so far back that we don't think that you should be held accountable for this crime because there was enough other stuff in the chain that did it, or it wasn't foreseeable, or a whole bunch of other stuff like that. And so,
wow. Okay.
Yeah. So this difference does kind of like it, it's so prevalent in society that it actually is a part of criminal law, maybe tort law. Actually, I don't think it's
so. You could say, you could be like, there are so many variables in this case that caused the murder of this person that they are no longer culpable for the murder.
Yes. Yeah. It could be like a lower one, like manslaughter or something else. It really wouldn't take place in murder because you're so direct to like the killing usually.
Sure.
But it is possible. Like a lot of ones, what they do is like they is involved with driving or like with cars and stuff. Like if like various conditions or things that you do with your vehicle, like, oh, that contributed to the person dying. But what you did was so far out that you never, like, it wasn't your intention to kill the person. Yeah, I mean, like various different things of culpability.
Yeah. So, like your brakes failed.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
and you hit someone.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's got dark.
Yeah. It got dark. Anyways, driverless cars.
Yeah. So now we'll apply this same logic to a driverless car.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in a driverless car, okay? And you're going down the street, and there's a group of school kids crossing the street.
Okay.
And the driverless car can't stop in time. Does the driverless car plow through the school kids, killing them all, or does it swerve to the right, crash into a wall, and kill you in the car?
Swerves to the right, crashes and kills you. And here's why I think it should do that is that if you go back to the lever type thing, like that can give you part of the answer, but it can't give the full answer, as we saw with the like the second hypothetical. But if you're looking at it as just a zero-sum game of how many lives are we saving, then you want to save the kids over the one person. But I think it actually goes a step further than that, is that the person that's in the car is like, they're taking steps and getting like almost like a benefit from the driverless car, or taking on the risk of getting in the driverless car, than what the kids are, right? They're saying, I want this convenience. And so I think they should bear a little more of the risk that is associated with a possible driverless car. The kids that are crossing the street aren't actively taking on the risk, right? They live in a society where driverless cars exist, but they themselves are not necessarily in that situation, they aren't making the choices or taking the actions that they're getting the benefit from that single driverless car. And so I feel like if you're looking at a shifting of burdens and shifting of injury and shifting of death, then I think it is more appropriately shifted to the owner and driver of the car or rider of the car.
Uh-huh. So now, if that was the choice that would be made, would you be in a driverless car? Would you use them?
Would I use a driverless car? Yes.
If you knew that you could be killed at any moment.
Yes.
Interesting.
Because I feel like it's the same or greater risk that I take in riding in a non-driverless car today.
Well, that is one of the arguments, is that this is a very, very small percentage of something. Like there's low probability of this ever happening, but it's the question of, and it would save so many lives, driverless cars. I mean, you would no longer have a lot of these auto deaths. Mm-hmm. Like all these things would be great, but it's the idea behind it, where it's like, who deserves to die now? And the interesting thing that they were talking about in the podcast, which I didn't even think about, these cars are going to know everything about you.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to know your age, where you grew up, your occupation, how much money you make in a year, directions of where you're going all the time. So it's even going to be scanning people on the street and knowing all the information about them.
Mm-hmm.
So you could be like, oh, well, those two school kids, they have asthma, so they don't have a lot of time left.
Poor
and you're making $100,000 a year. I mean, you know, I mean, you're doing pretty well for yourself. We might as well just smack those kids and call it a day.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like they can make, it's they like, can make it's value like, judgments oh, on life.
Yeah. And I mean, it's going to be calculating all the different people in all different cars. Like there's an 80-year-old guy over there. He's not got a lot of time left. All right. Mm-hmm. Forget it. It's fine. Let's just do that. You know, it's so it's going to be making a lot of decisions about literally about dying.
Yeah. No, it's true.
Which is scary.
And that goes to the Will Smith movie, I, Robot, even.
Oh, yeah, kind of.
Spoiler alerts for if you guys haven't seen it, but sorry. The and there's a point in it where Will Smith is saved instead of a child in a submerged car, and the robot saves Will Smith, and Will Smith holds a grudge against robots, saying, "Why didn't you save the kid?" And the robot did a probability of which of the two lives is more likely to live if it were saved, right? All right, well, the probability that I can save the kid is 10%, and the probability I can save Will Smith is 80%, so I'm going to go with Will Smith instead of the kid. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Will Smith is the kind of like, should have saved him, why did you save me type thing.
Yeah.
And so, they could even draw down, not even based on how valuable is this life that I'm about to take. It could even be like, what are the chances that the kid is going to die if we plow into them versus what are the chances that the adult, that the rider in the car is going to die if I run into the tree, right? Like, oh, the kid has a 20% chance of dying if we run into all of them, but the adult has an 85% chance of dying if we run into the tree. Well, then they'd be like, oh, we could run to the kids. But if one of those kids dies and doesn't look like a good outcome, they'd be like, no, drive the damn thing into the tree and kill the adult. Like, so it's just kind of, yeah, that can be another way that it happens, that it could just even based on probability decide that one. So
yeah, well, this is one of the biggest struggles with car manufacturers right now, trying to make completely driverless cars, is this whole idea about what you should do. And the car manufacturers in this case actually say that it would plow into the kids and not
really
the wall, and that's because they want to protect the person in the car, and they have to say that because most people, even though you would say that you would still be in a driverless car,
most people would not
use a driverless car if they knew that they had a risk of the car killing them.
Yeah. That's interesting. It's very interesting to say, because like, even as you said it just there, that is the same exact thing that we do when we get in a regular car. I go out and I purchase a car and I drive a car knowing that there is a risk that I get in, that the car is going to kill me. Like, and so it's the same thing, but it's like, for whatever reason, when it feels like there's a greater force above us, it's like, because I think it's all of us are like, no, I know how to drive a car. I won't be the one that kills me this time when I get in the car. But like, when it's a driverless car, you'd be like, well, I'm not the one controlling it, so I have to rely on someone else not killing me.
So. You're when you're driving a real car, you have the lever next to you the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the lever is the car. Mm-hmm. You know, you're using the tool to possibly kill someone.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting.
Yeah, it was a great podcast episode.
I'm going to listen to this after we get done with this podcast.
It's very good.
Man, that's really good. That is awesome. That is awesome. That's one of the cool things, though. One of the things I love about I want to say resurgence, but it's not resurgence. Like the increase in popularity of podcasts, at least in very recent history, is it really exposes people to the like thoughtful, like deep dive information type stuff that, you know, people weren't necessarily getting previously, right? Like it was on NPR, but NPR's audience, in my opinion, wasn't as big as what podcasts are reaching today, right? I feel like it's reading a larger variety of people, maybe not as many people, but I feel like it's at least made it more commonplace that people would listen to that kind of content, which is really cool. So
yeah, and if you guys want to listen to it, it's Radiolab, and the name of the podcast is Driverless Dilemma, and it came out in late September.
Awesome. And we will have a link in the show notes, so make a note of that.
Make a note of it.
Show note link for driverless car episode.
Even though it's manuals, we kind of talked about the entire podcast. But like, they do like a whole bunch of things with CAT scans and brains and decision making, and like they literally CAT scan people's brains while they were making the decisions that we were just talking about, and it brought some interesting things.
That is cool. That is really cool.
Yeah,
so I like the part of me wishes I was like a philosophy major in undergrad.
Did you do like a lot of philosophy things in law school?
Not really. I mean, okay. So
I would have thought you would have done some stuff like that.
We do. You have a few points of it in various law school type stuff, where like you'll have small sections where they'll go on, like you see it in criminal law a lot because they want to kind of get you to like kind of what we touched on, but like the idea of culpability, right? How does the law get to what it is? But a lot of law school, at least the law schools can do it differently. My law school, a lot of what you do is you learn everything through case law pretty much, right? You read cases and how judges decided various things and how law should be applied. And then you kind of argue both sides of it. They do the Socratic method where the law school professor will basically pepper you with questions the entire time. And like, they don't ever like teach or lecture. They just ask you questions and challenge the way you're thinking on it. And like with everybody, right? So they go, oh, kind of like what you did with me. Like, oh, well, you know, they did this. Would you be willing to go to this step? Right. And they kind of challenge that to kind of suss out what the rules are of the various cases. So you kind of get some of that. And through that, you get, I wouldn't say it's like philosophy, but you do get a little like deeper, especially when you take like legislation, like, oh, creating a laws and how should that be applied in our current system? You do get a little more of like what the fundamental type rights are and stuff like that. So, but you don't get too much philosophy because it's kind of like, how do you work within a current system more than how does humanity function and what is right and what is wrong?
Damn.
I know, I'm sorry. But I did take, I took one philosophy class in undergrad. And it was my very first semester of college. And I think I dropped it within 2 weeks because like when you're a freshman, bright eyed, bushy tail, you're like, ah, this sounds awesome and interesting. I'm going to go take this. And you sit down in it. And like the first day they're like, we go over like this crazy thing. And by the way, I need like 1,000 words on this by Monday. You're like, I'm a business major with double major. Like, I don't think I can handle the philosophy class right now. So I took one for a little bit. And then I ended up dropping it just because it was I think rightfully so. I don't think I would have done well freshman year if I was trying to tackle that in addition to the other workloads. So
hello everybody, my name is Dr. Kerfuffle. Welcome to Philosophy 101. Today we're going to be talking about a very, very easy topic for you guys. We're going to introduce it to you very slowly. What is life? All right, let's write that on the board.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, there. I mean, and like it was with law school, like that philosophy class just had a lot of reading too. So it was like, it just did not fit well. And then instead of that, I took ballroom dancing, which was fantastic.
There's a lot of philosophy.
There's a lot of philosophy with that. Ballroom dancing was one of the best classes I took. And like outside of my core actual like learning, it was like one of the best just like general social type classes I took, which was awesome.
Perfect.
So it was
perfect.
I strongly recommend. I said this a while ago. I want to take a ballroom dancing class in Chicago somewhere. Like
you should.
I think I'm going to. I believe Coco the Louder does like. She used to do belly dance streams. She doesn't do them anymore. But she's a big dancer. And so I think if I find one, I'll see if she wants to be my dance partner at ballroom dance classes. So I'll have to search one out and get in touch with her. So
perfect. You should do that.
I think it'd be so much fun. Ballroom dancing's great. I'm a terrible dancer. Terrible dancer. So yeah, we'll see.
No, you're fine.
But it'll be great. I'll
be like Dirty Dancing.
Exactly. I've never seen that movie. I've had the time of my life, and I owe it all to you. Well, now that we've lost everybody, we can talk about the good stuff.
We can talk about anything now.
Exactly. Nobody's here. It's perfect. We are sponsored by G Fuel this week. Like, nobody.
Try out my new flavor. My custom flavor. It just says shit on here.
Just says brown.
Try
water.
Out the skanky shit flavor, exactly. Everybody. Right now, use code Skanky or Shenantics for 10% off your G Fuel order. You also get a free shit shaker cup.
So let's pivot from this, not the shit flavor, but something that does have custom flavors. Have you tried the Skanky Fam Summer Fall Tea Blend yet?
I haven't yet. I just got it yesterday, though.
Skanky, I was so hoping we could talk about it on the podcast. You've let me down. I was so excited about this.
I'm gonna be trying it tomorrow on stream.
I would love to know how many people have tried this flavor before you, because I think Praise has. I have. There's tons of people that have. That have
I tried think three.
This. Three.
At least that's what people have told. That's what I've been told.
Well, I know.
I know you, Tiny.
Yep.
I didn't know if Praise had tried
it. I thought
it
yet. He did, but maybe not. Maybe I just assume he has.
I know someone else bought it too, but I'm not sure. I don't remember.
Well, there's a couple people out there.
Tried it yet.
You guys hurry up. My guess is that he might not try it by the time this episode goes out. If you have a chance, order some, try it before Skanky does. We need to get the numbers up.
Yeah, I'm going to be trying it on Monday night on stream.
Oh, very cool. That's going to be cool. I'll have to make sure I'm there.
Hell yeah.
So, oh, I won't be there.
Hell yeah.
I have a birthday party I have to go to.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, it's all right. I know. Sorry.
It's fine. Whatever. Just watch the VOD, I guess.
We'll do. We'll be muted because of music, or we'll actually get to hear it.
Great. Can't wait. I never play copyrighted music on my stream.
Nice.
Oh, I almost unplugged my PC. Whoopsies.
Okay, that would have been great.
That would have been terrible.
That would have all right, let's start back from the beginning. Let's take all the death stuff out, all the G Fuel stuff out, leave this thing again. We're good.
I would not be able to redo this philosophy one because, like, I mean, if I say it to you a second time, you'd be like, really? Wow.
Well, now I know for sure that I would not push the person because I'm not a monk and I'm not a psychopath. So.
Buddhist. Buddhist monk.
Oh, yeah, Buddhist monk. Sorry.
You're not able to silence your conscience.
Yeah, interesting. So, I don't know. It's what's kind of cool, kind of related to all this, is I played for my spooky horror streams this October, which I only got two of them in, which was sad, but it was good. I played Soma, which you had previously played.
Ah, yes, tell me.
And I will say, first of all, and I have to, like, this is probably the most surprising thing to me, is, like, I don't like horror games, and I will say over the past 2 years, well, I guess it's a little bit over a year now, because I played it last October and this October, I played Outlast last year, I played Soma this year, and those two games, Soma definitely included, are phenomenal games. And I totally wrote them off because, oh, horror games, I don't like horror genre, but, man, Soma makes you think. It's got just, like, an amazing storyline, amazing just universe, world, atmosphere that you, like, are going through. It poses challenging questions. It's really, 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 really cool.
It is.
Really good it game. Is. I will say that, I mean, a second thing is Skanky turned me onto this, is that there's a nice five-part, like, documentary series that goes through everything that happens in Soma. And I almost feel like that is required watching for anyone that plays and likes Soma, because
it is.
There's so much that you miss when you're playing the game that they suss out little details to, and the story is even deeper than, like, you originally, and the lore is even stronger than you, like, I originally picked up. One thing that I wish that they did is not, this isn't really spoilers, but I wish that, and maybe it's because I'm spoiled by the Telltale games, but I wish they kind of, you make a few decisions that don't really impact storyline, I don't think, but I wish that they kind of showed me what decisions I made in the moment. And then there's a second thing that you do, is that you can take a survey when you find it in the world, and then you take the same survey again at the end of the game. And I would love to know how my answers compared to each other when I was in the middle of it all to when I finished it all, because I feel like they were different, or I at least cared more about my answers at the end of the game. And I would love to see how that changed comparatively, because that would have been really, really cool. So I can't really say anything else about it, because everything else that you say about this game is just a giant spoiler. So
I
strongly, strongly, strongly recommend it. It also brought to mind a different thing, and that I think that I've kind of been thinking a little bit about with video games, is that I wish the story in this game is so incredibly good, but there are people that legitimately do not want to, or would make them just, like, feel terrible to play a horror game. And I feel like they're missing out on so much with Soma that I wish Soma almost had a non-horror mode way to play the game, because the story is just that good. And it presents so many just interesting philosophical ideas into it that I wish that was like available to people. Kind of like how Uncharted has a narrative mode that you can play where it like takes out all the difficulty of the game, and it's like the story is good enough that you can just go through it and play it without even having to be good at video games. Like, you just move on through the story. And I wish that Soma had that, and I wish just like all games kind of had like the base level, you can just go play the game without any skill involved in it.
That would be kind of nice. A narrative Soma would be kind of cool.
Yeah, like take out all the jump scares. And because like, and I was doing the same thing like with Outlast was fantastic, and I love the story in the game, but you also couldn't do that with Outlast because I feel like the horror element of Outlast is so integral to the story, right? Like, I feel like if you take entire horror part out, the story doesn't really make sense anymore.
Well, the whole camera thing is it's a literal mechanic.
Exactly.
In the whole game, and it's how you progress. So I don't know if that would really
work. So it wouldn't work with Outlast, but I feel like Soma they could do it. But I think that'd be cool. So
it would work with Outlast too. All they had to do is like not make that game. And it would have been great.
I like how I played Outlast last year, absolutely loved it. And then I was like thinking about games to play for this year on stream and for the scary stream, and Outlast didn't even make the short list. It didn't even make the long list. It wouldn't even get second thought. I was like, all right, here, what games? And Outlast 2 was nowhere on there. I was just like, okay, here's a few of them, and then I'll ask people's opinions and narrow it down. And it's like, I already know I'm not playing Outlast 2. So,
I mean, it's a really, really good... I mean, to say one good thing about it, it's a really good running simulator. And dying simulator.
Yeah.
Very, very good running and dying simulator.
I mean,
I think that that's what they were working on that title, like, for a while.
Run and die.
They were
going
to call it the running and dying simulator. But, like, it didn't, I mean, they wanted to keep with, you know, the same thing, you know, with the Outlast thing. You know, I get that, so.
Yeah.
I think they made it the second one.
Interesting. Oh, man. I will say one thing that it's kind of interesting that Outlast 2 turned out the way it did, because the sneak peek sample part of the game that people got to play at around Halloween last year is what actually got me to play Outlast. Was I think it was Sledge. I saw Sledge play the little demo thing that came out, and I was like, oh my god, this is legitimately terrifying, but it looks really, really cool. I was like, maybe I can play Outlast 1, and then went ahead and did it. So it's kind of a shame that the second one didn't live up to the hype of the first one.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Yeah, it kind of sucked. I was kind of sad about it.
Yeah. So many good things.
I really love the first one. Yeah. And the DLC.
Yeah. DLC. I think that thing that really has to be emphasized is the DLC for Outlast 1 is next
better
level.
Better than the game.
It's so, yeah, better than the game.
Better than the base game.
It is. Better than the base game, but it needs the base game to make sense. So,
yeah, you need to play the base game. They're both good. DLC is better.
Yes,
though, I
yes.
think.
No, I agree.
Just don't play the second one.
Just don't play the second one. Just
for God's sake.
Assume that it ended after the first game.
It did. It did end.
If they create
Outlast 2 has nothing to do with the first.
Yeah,
one.
Which is kind of. I think it's also like, although it didn't rise to the occasion, it is kind of nice when a game developer does that instead of just like keep piling on to a storyline that they know has been successful. It's kind of nice to like let the original just be and as its own thing instead of trying to continue it on because they know that one was successful. So I appreciate the developer not doing that, because that would have sucked. Can you imagine like if it's like a continuation of Outlast 1 and then it turned out to be garbage and it was like, oh, why did you do that to Outlast 1? So
I think Outlast 1's story was kind of over after the DLC too.
Yeah.
It was kind of done. So.
Yeah, but with money, you never know. Sometimes people are like, it's over, but maybe we can revive it somehow.
That's true.
So who knows?
That's true. Outlast 2, like, I still don't really even get the story in that.
Yeah, I can't help you. I've been still trying
to figure it out.
For months now, it's just like every Friday, Skanky sits down, like mind maps it out, beautiful mind style. I mean,
it was just like, the problem was I wanted it to end, but when I got to the ending, I was like, why the hell did you end it there? I was like, I can't keep running and dying over and over and over again. Like, It's not fun.
Exactly. Oh man.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. One of these days, like one of these days, I have to play it now. Just gonna have to compare it to.
Yeah, you do. You should play it just because, and then I don't know, figure out and refund it or something. Yeah,
that might be a good Christmas game.
A good Outlast 2. Nice. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays, everyone.
Happy holidays. Let's play Outlast 2.
Everyone's home for the holidays. They have the Emco stream up, and I'm just like dropping F bombs left and right. And, like, the parents come in, they're like, "What's going on?" They're like, "Sorry."
Happy holidays!
Get out of here, fucking monster! That'll be great. I can't wait.
Getting coal in your stocking! Oh, God, man.
Oh, man. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see. But. I don't know.
So I wanted to bring up this Twitch drama thing because we didn't talk about it last week.
Yeah, last week we got very tied up into the TwitchCon coverage. So
we did. Yeah.
Good thing we got moving at the beginning of last episode, though, because it took us a whole podcast.
It really did, which was kind of crazy. Yeah,
but so Twitch saw Twitch drama. I love Twitch drama.
Well, this kind of sucks because it actually ended on the 3rd, November 3rd. But I think we can still have a discussion about it.
Yeah, of course. We got this. Shenandics. Okay. We cover all the relevant current topics.
Always, always, always. Okay, so what happened was during October, they had this promotional thing where every time somebody donated 250 bits or more to somebody, they would get a crate.
Okay.
And in the crate would be, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7? I think it's here. Six. It'll have 6 random emote chances. Like, you get one chance to get 6 random emotes.
Okay.
And once you collected all 6 of those emotes, you would unlock a zombie kappa emote that you would have permanently.
Okay.
Forever.
All right.
And people freaked out because Twitch had crates.
haven't they had crates for a while now, though?
Have they?
I think they have. I think crates came out when they started selling games on...
Oh, the game thing. You could get a random thing.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I feel like every time you spent X amount of dollars on games on a partner's channel before they had affiliates, you would get X number of Twitch crates.
I think there's a bit of a difference there, though, because this was like randomized and you'd have to collect all the emotes to then unlock the permanent emote. But I get what you're saying. Kind of almost the same thing, but this one was randomized. So... people were kind of freaking out about this, and I had a bit of a discussion with someone on the Twitch subreddit about this, because this title really stuck out to me as being ridiculous. This guy writes, after 5 zombie emotes, on the 6th, it gave me the zombie what face emote again and scammed me out of getting the zombie kappa. What the fuck? Twitch scamming us?
Oh, man.
And I'm like, like, no? I don't know. Like, I thought that was really silly. So I said, wait, so Twitch is scamming people out of money that you are voluntarily buying and giving to other streamers? This is confusing me. And this guy says, they're encouraging people to spend at least 250 bits at a time to get the emotes, something that a lot of people would otherwise not do. I'm like, okay, but the emotes are merely an incentive, not the sole reason to buy bits. There's no requirement for you to obtain these emotes for any other purpose than for your own personal enjoyment. Ooh! Firing back. And this guy's like, right, an incentive. He put in italics, by the way, to spend at least 250 per donation when many people would not donate that much at once. And when the incentive isn't realized, you just get baited into donating more bits for nothing to return when they said you'd receive it. It's the classic bait and switch. Which I'm like, no.
Real quick clarification for those of you guys that don't know, 250 bits on Twitch amounts to about $2.50.
Yes, good
so
point.
So just kind of make sure we know what kind of value we're dealing with here.
Yes. And I ended this shit. He didn't respond back, so I won.
Oh, God, Skanky.
But from what I understand, the emotes are randomized. There is a chance for you to get doubles. I even linked the blog post in there. If someone is buying 250 bits to get emotes, then they take the responsibility in knowing how unlocking the emotes works. A bait and switch happens when you're expecting a bargain on an item when the product is actually inferior to the one promised. That isn't happening here, bud. I didn't write bud, but I just want to add that in there. At the end of the day, this is only an incentive to buy bits, which are exclusively used for tipping broadcasters, not for getting exclusive emotes. Boom, drop the mic. All right. I just wanted to get that out of there. But I thought it was really silly because people were kind of freaking out over this. Mm-hmm. And if anything, this is just something extra that you get from Twitch. It's like a small little game. They never said that you should be buying bits and using them just so you could get these emotes. Yeah. And in the end, if you're doing that, like, that's on you, man. Like, it's not Twitch's fault.
Yeah.
Like, sure, they made the thing happen, but like, if you want to participate and then you're complaining about people, them scamming you, then like, you got a bit of a problem here. Yeah. Like, you're not taking responsibility for your buying habits.
That is true. That is true.
What did I say wrong? You disagree with me, I'm calling.
Oh, no, I don't disagree with you in this one, actually. Surprisingly. No, but...
Surprisingly?
No, I don't disagree with you in this one. I saw there was a second part to the drama a little bit, if I remember correctly, that in order to, on average, in order to like unlock all of the zombie emotes or whatever, like people are spending like $45 on average to get it, which people were thinking was very high to unlock the zombie emote permanently, which my thing to that is, yeah, the probability sucks. Like, maybe Twitch should have tuned it in a little better, but at the same time, like, after you see the first person do it, maybe not everyone else should do it. But
yeah, I mean, just don't do it.
This, okay, so there's two parts to this. It's like, crates feel very weird to me to have on Twitch. It feels like it doesn't fit. It doesn't fit the model. So hold on, I gotta rewind. I gotta say one other thing that's like directly relating to what you said about the incentive for people to give bids, and the person kind of got upset with that. A lot of the things that happen on Twitch, I don't think people realize they see it as something that's like all lovey-dovey happiness, but it really is Twitch designing it in a way for you to spend more money. For example, being able to notify how long your sub streak is. Yeah, great for the people you get to show and brag about how long it is, but really the reason it's there is because it builds you into this thing that it shows you the sunk cost of what you have and makes it less likely that you're going to get rid of a sub. Once you hit 20 months, you're like, oh, I don't really watch the broadcaster anymore, but like, I might watch them again like next month, and I already have 20 months in on it, so do I really want to cancel it now? It's only $5. And then people end up keeping the sub around because like they have this big long sub train and they don't really want to get rid of it because they spent all these months building it up. I currently have that dilemma with a certain streamer that I'm like, I kind of want to get rid of it, but it's at like 26 months. I'm like, yeah, but like I got 26 months in on this thing. Like, do I want to give that up?
Yeah.
It's Twitch's genius way of getting people to stick around for subs. September, another great example is that half off first month subs, what didn't cost Twitch anything, really, like $2.50 per person, but you have a whole bunch of people that are now getting themselves into the staying sub to people, right? Because, oh, I forgot to cancel for month two, and then month two comes around, they're like, oh, I really like the streamer, now I'm sub to them for 4 or 5 months, and then the other kind of social engineering kicks in with the resub notifications that now you're going to stay there subbed longer. So a lot of what they do around that type of stuff is to try and get you to spend more money. I don't really have a problem with that. They are a business, and also, you know, there are streamers that rely on this for their income, so it's like almost, you can look at it two ways. Wow, it's crappy to the consumer that they do that, but on the flip side, it's really great for the streamers that kind of Twitch is also helping them out in this way by getting people to do it. So same thing with bits, right? Like, they do it with people for first time bit buyers. They always have promotions that you get half off your first 500 bits if you're a first time buyer or something like that, because the idea is to get you into the system and used to spending money, right? It's not because Twitch is being super nice to you, it's because they want you to start using the system. And so this is the same thing where it's like, oh, we know people like emotes, well, why don't we do this like thing where it can tie it to using bits? It gets the streamer some revenue, it gets us some revenue, it, you know, the viewer gets something extra for using bits that really cost us nothing, and then maybe they'll use more bits going forward. So that's how the model is, and it happens in so many places on Twitch that the fact that they're all up in arms about this one is kind of surprising to me. Actually, not really surprising to me. I guess that's what people do all the time. But it feels weird to me to have crates on Twitch just because I feel like it's they're looking elsewhere at a model that's successful and they're trying to bolt it onto their system. And I don't like that. And the reason why I don't like that is because I'm a very big advocate of free to play and microtransactions. Yes, I like microtransactions. I like free to play a lot. And I feel like Twitch doing this is promoting the bad side of microtransactions and what everyone hates about it. And so I'm gonna reference a great tweet that I've actually had saved since I saw it, which was back in July, because I wanted to talk about this topic. And the tweet is from Elizabeth Sampet, and she says, I believe she's a game designer for, I can't see her bio right now because it's covered by the tweet. I'll be able to read it in just a second, but she says, do you know why free-to-play has a bad rap? And she says it's because a bunch of designers who hate free-to-play went into free-to-play design for the paychecks. And that is kind of what it is. You have people that didn't like the system, but then like, hey, we can use it to make money. And so they implemented shitty versions of free-to-play, and that we see it all the time. But I like free to play because I like a system going forward that it allows people to get into video games that I love without having to try and convince them to drop $60. Do you know what it's like to convince somebody to play Destiny 2 when they aren't sure if they like that format of game? Like, that's a very, very, very high ask. Where if it was a lower barrier to entry or if it was free to get started on it, then it's easier for me to convince that person to play. Did you ever play any of the free-to-play games on mobile, like Clash of Clans?
No.
So, I'm going into a big free-to-play discussion right now. I hope you don't mind.
No, it's fine.
So, I played a lot of Clash of Clans back in the day. It's a mobile game that is like all those mobile games where it's free-to-play, you can go and spend no money, and to advance in it faster, you can buy, I think it's gems, and then the gems let you like speed up production or buy units or stuff like that. And it's just this giant money pit. However, I think it's a very fun game to play. And I put hours upon hours into this game without spending any money, because one cool thing about the free-to-play system is you can play it in the challenge of like, I want to see how far I can get without spending money. That's one cool thing you can do. But the second thing with it is there are people who spend like hundreds of thousands of dollars on this, or even $1,000 on a video game. And I think that is actually a decent feature, because the video games, they cost money to develop, right? Like, and it's almost like these people that are willing to put $1,000 into Clash of Clans is subsidizing the development for me that doesn't want to spend any money on the game. And so I kind of like that aspect of it. And I feel like going forward, if a developer realizes that, not so much I want to put in a free-to-play to screw people over and take money from them, but I want to put it in so that it's able to fund development by people that can afford it and that like the game, and I can keep making content, and then other people can enjoy my game for lower cost if they can't afford to pay for it or they choose not to. Like, I think that is a good system overall, and I like where it's going for the future of video games, because they are definitely headed that way. So, how do you feel about free-to-play?
I guess it's okay. Unless they're having like things that you need that you buy that change gameplay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And somewhere. I mean, if there's an aesthetic thing going on, like, I guess it's okay. Yeah. What I find a lot now is a lot of games go free to play when they're kind of like, hey, let's get some more people in.
It's like a last ditch effort a lot of times.
Like Deceit right now, they went free to play, and it's kind of like a ditch effort to get people to play, it seems. Or they made their money and they're done, which I think is like not really what's going on, because why would you do that? But yeah, I don't know. I find that there's a lot of games here that they do both now. They're not the free to play model, but they have their thing, their add-on stuff that they charge for. Like Rockstar is perfect for this. You know, that's literally where they make almost all their money, is from the stupid shark card stuff. And people buy it. Like, they use real money to buy fake money. I don't know. But that's their thing. And CSGO, I mean, that's where they made a lot of money, is through those stupid crates and everything. So, I mean, I get it. I understand why people do it.
I guess the reason why I like it, and I like the hybrid model, like I like the free-to-play model. I also like the hybrid model because my worry is that a developer would stop supporting a game if it's not profitable. And you have games like Overwatch where a big part of it is we want more content going forward. We want more heroes. We want more maps. We want them to continue developing for it. But a lot of times it's not really sustainable or makes financial sense for them to do it when they sell the game once for $60 and then they're not getting new purchases of it because everyone that's bought Overwatch pretty much plays Overwatch, right? And so then if you're a year or two in, they have to find another way to bring money in, right? And it used to be that people would sell like DLC and stuff like that. And then it's kind of moved over to the loot box crate system. And so one good thing about it is that you can get continued development for games that require it and get more money into it to fund development for it through various systems. They have more options to do it instead of just being like, all right, this game has run its course. Like, it's out there if you want to play it, but like, we're not really supporting it. And so I think that's why we're seeing more turning over to it. And even more relevant example of why I think the industry in general is going to move a lot more towards it is I saw this on The Verge, I think it was a week ago. Headline, Super Mario Run's 200 million downloads didn't result in acceptable profit for Nintendo. So Super Mario Run was released on iOS and Android. There was 200 million downloads, I believe, across the two platforms. And the way that it worked is that you got to play the first, like, I think, three or four levels for free. And then if you wanted to unlock the rest of the game, you had to pay $10 or something like that, which was a high price point for mobile. And compared to their other games that they've released, like Fire Emblem Heroes, which uses a different type of system, Super Mario Run didn't quite meet the profitability levels that Nintendo needed. And so if we want to see more Nintendo games on iOS and Android, then we need to make sure that they can make money in a way that is also pleasant and acceptable to consumers, right? Like, I think there's a fine level between that, right? That if they create a crappy free-to-play system where it's like, wow, this isn't fun to play because the only way to play it is to give you tons of money, then that doesn't work for the developer either. And so it's like there's this fine line to walk with it going forward. And so I like it, but I hope that developers do it correctly, because we've all seen examples of like just terrible microtransactions in games where it just ruins the experience.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that goes back to the idea that the people that implemented those probably thought poorly of microtransactions anyways. And they're like, well, this is how you implement it. You just screw people over and make them spend money for basic things in game, which I don't think is the best way to do it. So,
yeah, I also kind of think that a lot of video games are still very, very console based, even though, you know, we're very, you know, PC driven. Yeah. I think both of us. But console games make it a little bit more difficult, I feel like, to have this kind of model where you get a game for free and then you like have all these transactions in it that you can like do whatever you want. Like, it does happen. Like, Rockstar has that. That's cool. And they have games that are free, and now you can get a digital copies of games in the marketplace. I still have a feeling that people are going out and still getting, you know, CD copies of games. And people are used to being like having to buy a game beforehand, like they would if they're going to go see a movie or they're buying a DVD or something. Like, we're all very used to this classical model of going out, spending $60 on a game and playing it, and the DLC comes out and you have to buy the DLC, but that's a whole different story. So in some cases, I sometimes think that maybe we're trying to fix something that doesn't need to be fixed in any way. Like, that's coming from me, though, as someone who can afford to buy games and stuff. So I can understand the people who can and like those free-to-play games and are able to afford them now because they're free and they don't have to, you know, buy it upfront. I think most of this comes into play with the mobile games, like you're saying with the Clash of Clans and stuff, because we're all so used to the model was already put in place where apps came out and they were free. And like, yeah, you can pay for apps, but the apps that you do need to pay for, I mean, they have much lower download rates, I would assume, compared to the free ones. So that's when you're thinking about, okay, well, I have this mobile game, I'm going to release it for free, and then have these aesthetic items that we can charge people, or like, you need to get a certain amount of stars to get to the next level. It's like, well, you can buy them here, you know, like that kind of stuff. So that, I think applying that kind of model to the stuff on PC and stuff on console, like, it's cool for certain people. For me, I don't really care all too much. Like the Fortnite free-to-play stuff, I think it's cool because I was able to test out the game. And it's free for what you get. That's pretty cool. But I don't know. I guess it's cool that it was free to play because I knew that I wouldn't pay for it.
See, like, I think that's Fortnite's a great example. Like, imagine having like someone else that wants to play with you having to be like try and convince you to buy the game because they want to play it with you. And if they do convince you and it turns out to not be your type of game, or you like other games better, so you'd rather not play it. Like, well, now you're like, both of you are like the guy or girl that convinced you to spend $60 on it. They're like, well, shit, now I kind of feel bad because they didn't like it that much. Or on your side, you're like, damn, I spent like $60 on this game that I really don't like, or I'd rather play PUBG instead. Right. So it's kind of, you get both sides of it. But kind of on the console side, though, that it makes, like, I feel like you're correct currently that people are in the mindset of, I go out and I go buy the game for X amount of dollars and come back and play it. But we also grew up on that model for decades now, where there are another generation of gamers coming in that are being raised at 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 on the model of mobile games. And so when they're in their late teens, early 20s, and then going forward, is it going to make more sense for them, the model that used to exist, or is the model that they're used to, because that's what they grew up with, mobile games, is that one going to feel more comfortable to them? So that's going to be interesting to see how that one goes going forward.
Should be interesting, yeah.
So, I think the second thing also is adults play kind of a big factor into this, like adults that have to purchase games for kids because the kids don't have any money of their own.
I
remember when I was younger, trying to convince my parents to spend money on a subscription MMO online was the biggest hurdle of my life. Like, there was no way I could convince them. They're like, wait, you mean this is recurring and I have to spend this money every month? And they're like, no, we're going to go buy the video game that I buy one time and you get to play that one. Now imagine like 5 years from now, you're like you got some like young kid that's like, mom, can we go get a game that costs $6? Like, wait. $60 for a game? No, you're gonna go play the game that's free, like you've been playing for the past few, you know, years. It's like, so it could even shift to that where they're like, the adults that are paying for it, they're like, I don't want to spend $60 for your video game, go find one that's for free. So that's all, that's another thing that could end up happening going forward. So it's it'll be interesting to see what happens.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's an interesting thought.
So, as long as they exist, I love video games. I don't want them to go away, Skanky.
I hate them all.
I know you do. Why must you fight me?
I'm gonna become an IRL streamer.
Just IRL.
No.
Because, you know, a little known fact, all IRL streamers, they hate video games.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think. No.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, that'd be perfect for me.
It's not like Coco streams IRL, plays more video games than me. She does. But I love IRL streamers. I love good IRL streamers, I should say that. So
yeah, you should say that.
Yeah, I don't love all IRL streamers, but there's some good ones out there. Speaking of good streamers, Skinky.
Yes, I have a small streamer shout out.
Look at that. He's on top of it.
I do. I'm on top of my game. All right. So I found this streamer. I've been lurking in her stream for a couple of days now. I actually found her pretty recently. And her name is Made in China. As in Made
in China. Can you spell that for us?
It's a play on words. Play
can you
on
spell
words.
For us?
Her name is actually China.
Okay, cool.
And her name is spelled MAID3NCHINA.
I love that username.
She is a variety streamer. She plays. I think I actually found her playing. I think she was playing Destiny 2, I think.
Okay, very cool.
Or was it PUBG? I don't remember, but she does. I just saw she's done some Cuphead streams. She plays PUBG, South Park, a whole bunch of fun games. She's very, very nice. She has no idea who I am. Because I'm like the biggest lurker in the world. I feel like I don't actually like type in people's chats. And that's mostly because I'm very self-conscious about people calling me skunky, which
yes.
Lyric did today. So that's always good.
That's awesome.
I had my 1 year resub on Lyric today. Yeah. So he was like, skunky coming in with the 1 year. Thanks, man. I'm like, skunky, I love it. Okay. But yeah, anyway, sorry. Go and check out Made in China. She's very, very nice, very cool, chill person, and has no idea who I am, so make sure to say Shenantix sent you so she could be confused. Made in China, MAID3NCHINA.
Awesome. Sounds great. I cannot wait to check out her stream.
You should be excited.
Yeah, I should be.
Mcall, you have a food finish?
Yes, I do.
That's surprising.
I do because a very, very good friend of ours in the show, Lady Commander, gave me a food finish.
Who's that?
She is she's this awesome, awesome person from the West Coast that one day I hope to visit because she's so cool.
Okay, that's okay. Good enough for me.
Oh, side note real quick, because someone's going to be very upset with me if I don't ask you. Do you need my assistance in turning off scare alerts?
No, I'm fine. Thank you.
People are concerned. They're worried that your heart can't take it to.
Well, I forgot to turn them off and found that out during PUBG, and I actually should make sure that they're turned off right now.
It's great. I'm going to put some of those clips in the show notes. If you guys have not seen Skanky playing PUBG and getting a scare alert, what they are some of the best things I've ever seen. I love it.
Just like, come on, man. Like, I can't catch a break here.
No. Shenanigans is no longer a safe space.
Never was.
So food finish has to deal with cereal, aka one of the worst food groups in the world. But LC asked us, when you have a new box of cereal, do you open the bag the whole way across, or do you only open it enough to get the cereal out? She says afterwards, because she knows me too well, Mcall, I know this doesn't apply to you, but I know you'll have a good argument either way. Skanky, how do you open your cereal bags?
I open them just so that enough for the cereal to come out. I don't open the whole top.
All right. Here's the thing.
What's the problem with that?
I feel like that's not correct.
Why don't you feel that's correct?
That's not the way to do it. Like,
How would you do it then?
So, first of all, I don't live in your guys' little boxes that you're going to put me in, all right? I am my own independent android. I take my cereal.
Wait, so you are an android?
I mean, I'm my own independent person. So when I have my cereal, which I rarely eat, but when I was a child and I was forced to eat it, this is what I deem the appropriate way to eat cereal is because cereal lasts some amount of time. And so what you do is you take the bag, you open the bag all the way up across the entire way, not a little part. You open it up the entire way, pour yourself some cereal if you choose to. I don't recommend it. Then you take that cereal and you put it in a separate sealable container, an airtight container. You do not leave the cereal in the bag. What kind of monster are you? It goes in its own separate cereal container is how you need to do it. Stays fresher that way, which I don't think makes sense because cereal is all stale bread stuff anyways. I don't know what you guys are trying to preserve freshness for.
Well, usually this is what I do. Okay, I'll open up the side, right? Like where I want to pour, right? And usually when I'm done with that, I roll the top.
Okay.
And then I close the top and then I put it in there. That's
what do you do to the bag?
Here.
Do you clip the bag or anything?
No, I just roll the bag down.
All right.
Until it hits the top of the cereal, and then you close the top, and then you're all.
See, I feel like that's not doing any different than if you were to open the entire thing and do the same thing. I feel like same amount of like stale layers.
I feel like you have more control if you only open up one side.
How do you only open up one side? How do you open a bag?
Okay, so this is what you usually do. You open up a chip bag, right? You pop it open in the center. Okay.
Yeah.
Now you have a center. Now you take your finger and you swipe it towards the end that you want to have half
okay,
open.
Okay, I see what you're doing. I see your magicalness.
So you do it slow. Okay. You take your finger, you swipe it in mm-hmm. there. So now you have half the bag open.
So it's not just an end, now it's like half of the bag. Like it's a good portion of
kinda,
it.
Kind of, yeah. Half of the top of the bag.
All right, I see what you're saying. So now
if you open the top, the whole mm-hmm. thing, like sometimes that happens. And it's like, it's not a big deal.
Because it's cereal.
It's like, whatever. Because it's literally cereal and who cares.
Yes.
But I usually try to only open half okay. of it. Because I like the control of being able to say, okay, this is the end that I pour yeah. from.
So, I don't know. I feel like it's just too much work. I feel like maybe I'm
that's too much.
Maybe I'm
work?
Just applying it to the way I open chips, where I just like, grab each side of the top and just yank both sides, and as much as it opens because you gotta get your hand in there. Do you ever just eat cereal out of the box?
No, I always pour it in a bowl.
Do you use milk or no milk?
Well, if I'm just snacking, then no, I won't have milk. But if I'm having like actual cereal, mm-hmm. then yeah, I'll put okay. milk in. I was never a big milk fan of cereal.
I see. What?
Back in the day, I wasn't a huge fan.
What are your favorite kinds of cereal?
Honey Nut Cheerios.
All right.
Let's see.
The most adult of all cereal, questions. I guess.
Good questions. I love, Raisin Bran, mm-hmm. Wheaties, No Frost.
Wait, Wheaties, No Frost?
Yeah, I love it. What else? Let's see.
Such an adult.
Apricot Bran.
Okay. I don't even know what that is.
Organic, delicious.
Very impressed.
Prune.
Skanky's aging up as he's getting his cereal choices in right now.
What?
How often do you eat cereal?
Not very often, to be fair. Sometimes a nice old Ziploc bag of Honey Nut Cheerios is pretty cool to snack on. Like if you want like a little quick snack.
Makes you feel like an infant again.
Really though? I mean, like I don't really get cereal that much. I mean, I like your typical stuff. I like Kix a lot.
Kix are for kids.
You ever have Kix? Kix are for kids, man. And I like the ones with the berry flavors, like mm-hmm. the different. Those are really good. I like the frosted Wheaties. I was joking about all the other shit. I don't even know what that is. Although Raisin Bran's not that bad. Yeah, I like the frosted Wheaties. I like the what else? What's the pop ones?
I have no idea.
Oh, Rice Krispies.
Snap, crackle, pop,
Rice Krispies.
Those are good.
No,
they are not. I feel like if I...
Do you like Rice Krispies?
Yes, but that also is covered in marshmallow sugar.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it's... I don't know, man. I think you're being judgy.
I am being judgy. I do not like cereal. I have another question, another follow-up tangent. Roll up your plastic cereal bag that then goes back in the box, how do you do that? Okay. Do you just like manhandle two hands on top of it and like roll it all the way down, or do you have some like finesse that you go along with it, or chip bags for that matter, cereal or chip bags, and do you do them differently?
You said do you think I take out the plastic bag out of the cardboard box and pour?
Yeah, well, how else do you do it?
No.
So, okay.
You keep... Maybe this is why you don't like cereal. You don't know how to pour correctly. You keep the plastic bag in the cardboard box.
Okay.
You lift it up slightly. You open it. You slide your finger. You open up half of it. Plop it into the cardboard box. Then you pour out of the cardboard box.
Then, like, I imagine that the way you seal back up is you just, like, manhandle, shove a fist into the top of it.
Exactly. So what you do is you take the top of the bag. You tightly pack it down. You roll it. You push it down. And then you there's, like, a slight bulge out the sides of the cardboard mm-hmm. box. You tighten up that little cardboard top, and then you're all good. Now, chip bags.
Yeah. What is your method of madness for chip bags?
I roll that bad boy mm-hmm. down and I take a rubber band to it.
Wait, roll it down like horizontally, like it's
the same way.
Okay.
And I rubber band it.
Okay.
I don't do that with cereal though because of the cardboard box.
I see. So when I'm looking at your, so the roll is the same width as the width of the bag, just rolled all the way down. A nice even roll like that.
How else would it be?
So, because there's a savage way, which we'll get to in a second. Let me tell you how I roll up my chip bags.
Do you fold the sides and then do it?
That's I do the triangle too. Folds over, each one, and I fold the tip part down, and then chip clip it. Except I found this new chip clip that I like actually a little bit better, which is like a long pole that you kind of like slide into it, which is really cool. So that's kind of trying, that's changing me a little bit. But can we just both admit that the savage way to fold up a chip bag is just like grab the top and then spin the bottom of the bag?
I was just thinking that I that's a terrible way of doing it. You're gonna destroy all the things inside the chips. You're gonna crush
them. Terrible! I've seen people do it all the time. They just do that and they take like
I think it's the
rubber band and they rubber band the top. And so that's why I wanted to make sure.
Oh no!
I wanted to make sure you weren't savage. That just goes like whoosh 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 whoosh.
That's like you grab a broomstick, you tie a little thing on the end, you put the thing on top. You're like a hobo.
Exactly, dude. I need to know.
Like, come on, man. You don't
tweet at Shenantics Fanatics or hashtag Shenantics Fanatics on Twitter. Let us know. Do you hobo sack your chip bag? How do you guys fold your chip bag? Like a savage, like an eloquent gentleman like myself, or like a sophisticated person like Skanky? We need to know. Eloquent, sophisticated, savage.
Sometimes I'll just fold mine like you would the American flag.
Literally two people, you have to have someone to hold the bottom of the chip bag and you hold the top and like fold it over.
And I fold, I do the triangle.
Do you
fold
play the
as much
what
as
do
I
they
can
play on the bugle as they're doing that something? Do you do that too? Like it's a three-person job to fold up chips at the end of the day.
I don't know, that's actually a good question. I'm not too sure.
Taps or something, or is that at funerals?
I think that's at funerals. That got really dark. This was a really dark
podcast. We hit all the heavy hitters today. We talked about death and murder, moved on to free to play, and then we talked about chips, like, oh, and cereal. How dare I forget cereal? So, yeah, it's all the good stuff in Shenantics.
All the good stuff.
At least we finally moved off of pigeon racing.
God.
All right, Skanky. I think that'll cover it for this week.
Yeah,
you guys, it's been another episode of Shenantics. New episodes go live bright and early Monday morning, just in time for your workday, school day, and anything else that you do. We will be there hanging out with you. You can find the podcast wherever you find podcasts, including the iTunes Store, Google Play Store, and at our website at shenantics.rocks. If you have any extra time and you have strong feelings about cereal, chips, or the way to fold bags, make sure you leave us a review on iTunes. 5 stars or better will be sure to be read by us. We don't read anything below 4 stars. If you guys have any questions for us, you can send us a tweet at twitter.com/shenanticspod or email at shenanticspodcast@gmail.com. If you want to join the discussion, head on over to Discord. You can get an invite link at shenantics.rocks/about and click the invite to Discord link. Skanky, where can they find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/skanky, S-K-X-N-K-Y, and on Twitter at iSkanky, I-S-K-A-N-K-Y, and M-Cole, where can they find you?
I'm on Twitch at twitch.tv/M-Cole_, M-C-U-L, and the underscore symbol, and I'm also on Twitter with the same username, twitter.com/M-Cole_. Skanky, it was great talking this week. Can't wait to talk to you again.
Can't wait either. I'll see you later.
Later.